Arts Radio. I'm Robin Daly, presenter for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that supports people with cancer who are interested in using integrative medicine. Each week I get to talk to people from around the world who are involved in integrative medicine in some way, as practitioners, doctors, research scientists, activists, or maybe people with personal experience to share for the benefit of all. I was recently contacted by Joe Gamble. Joe is a functional medicine practitioner who's been on the show before, who is currently really disturbed by the situations that have been thrust on people with cancer in the UK as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And she wanted to have the opportunity to speak about strategies for these people to help them get to grips with some of the very challenging circumstances. I was delighted to say yes to Joe's suggestion, and so I'm talking to her over the phone now in Coventry. Hi Joe, great to have you back on the show again.
Hi Robin, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for offering to bring your functional medicine perspective onto the type of situation that lots of people with cancer find themselves in the midst of this pandemic. It's been suggested that the secondary effects of coronavirus in terms of the cuts in the treatment of other conditions could actually be worse than the impact of the actual virus. It's a really worrying situation. You support a lot of people with cancer. What are the kinds of stories that you're hearing about their experience?
Absolutely. I've had many a client phone me, email me, distraught that their ongoing cancer treatment has been cancelled, with often a no date in place for it to restart. Now, the clients that seem to be infected the most are the stage 4 cancer clients. And the story that comes out seems to be a bit conflictive. Now, some consultants or nurse practitioners are using the argument it's dangerous for them to be neutropenic during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think what's coming out, which is more the truth, is it's about resources and the availability of resources, with, you know, many nurses who normally do the treatment either being off sick or redeployed to other departments.
Right.
And then, therefore, you know, there isn't the availability of nurse practitioners or doctors to do the treatment. And I think that is a big part to the truth, because actually non-stage 4 cancer clients who are continuing their treatment are neutropenic during the pandemic and are having to be, obviously, incredibly careful. So it doesn't quite make sense why, if it's just about neutropenia, why they've pulled out the stage 4 cancer clients treatment and not the others.
Right.
So I think the truth is it's about availability of resources. And, you know, I think we can all put 2 and 2 together and then think, okay, stage 4 cancer clients have got less chance of survival, so they're the ones that are going to be hit the most. But I mean, in my opinion, this is shocking, and I've got many a stage 4 cancer client who isn't dying of cancer but living with stage 4 cancer. And I'm sure many of your listeners can you know, relate to this, that there are people who have stage 4 cancer for years. So just because it means that cancer's metastasized to a distant organ does not mean that they're in a life and death position today. So, you know, then we have to think about the physical effects of what's going to happen to their cancer without this essential treatment, not to mention the emotional effects on both themselves and the feeling that they've been cut loose from the NHS, but also to their families who might not be able to see their loved one with stage 4 cancer because of the lockdown, but then fear that their loved one might not be around for as long as a secondary effect to COVID.
Yeah, it's a complex situation and very difficult one for some people. So maybe you want to go through some of the kind of problems you've talked about and talk about the kind of things that you might advise to help people in those circumstances. What sort of strategies do you feel are useful given the very broad set of very difficult circumstances?
Absolutely. So in clients who already work with me, I am continuing to intensify my work, but maybe it would be best to talk about some of the new clients that I've had to pick up. just as a result of this situation, or who have therefore looked for alternatives.
Right.
So one of the things I always say is, let's think about the environment within your body, which is currently being a environment cancer cells have been happy to thrive. So whether that is because it's cancer cells have 10 to 20 times the receptors to glucose, whether it's because the environment is more acid and cancer thrives in an acid environment as opposed to an alkaline, maybe it's because of it's anaerobic, and we know that cancer cells thrive more in an anaerobic environment. And I am purely working to make the environment as hostile to those cancer cells as possible. Why? Because in a hostile environment, maybe the cancer isn't going to grow as rapidly. So whether this is about making improvement, whether this is about merely holding the individual, so trying to reduce decline, it varies from person to person. But it's about doing things that are proactive. And then thinking about supplements to encourage immune systems to be as active against rogue cells, but also active against COVID. So,
right.
You know, everybody is a different scenario, but let's just talk about vitamin C, for example. So we know, and you've only got to Google, ideally Google on a reputable site, something like PubMed, the link between high-dose vitamin C and fighting cancer cells. It's out there, published research. This isn't me claiming something that's not already been investigated. But then similarly, you've also can in the same search go vitamin C and COVID and look at how they're using high-dose vitamin C to fight COVID in patients who've got active COVID symptoms. And this is something that was released in the New York Times as, you know, one of the treatment regimens that were being looked into and used in the conventional world. So then thinking about, well, what supplements can we use for these clients to optimize the environment within their body during this time? And also moving forward, it just might be that COVID has made people go, I've got to do something about this. I've got to be proactive. And I think that's another thing I just want people to think about is the more that we feel we're doing, the less we feel out of control.
Right.
So for cancer clients and for non-cancer clients, a common theme in the last 6 weeks has been fear and out of control, because we all like to feel in control, don't we? And I think most clients who've got cancer already feel out of control because they can't control these cells mutating within their body. But then you put COVID and a global pandemic into the situation and everybody feels really out of control. And I think the biggest thing that we can do is give people education, so education what they can do, and empowerment that there are positive things that they can put into place from today. So rather than living life in fear and going, what's going to happen, I might not restart my treatment. And I mean, I've had one client say it might be as long as 6 months. So,
wow.
And I think the reality is nobody knows that, but it might be as long as 6 months. In which case, I'm like, if there's things that you can tangibly hold on to and put into place from today, both you and your loved ones feel in a position of, okay, there's certain things we are controlling in a really out of control world that truthfully we're in at the moment, aren't we?
Right. It's always a good plan to try and get yourself wised up and somewhat in control of your situation in order to, first of all, do something about it, but secondly, to actually put yourself in a much better mental state where you actually don't feel totally under siege and out of control. So, I particularly so at the moment, as you say, I mean, there are multiple reasons for having fear at the moment, and of course, it's a huge, widespread government-level problem where they're looking at the mental health of the nation under these lockdown conditions, which is a huge cause for concern. But for cancer patients, there's this extra layer where they've had their treatment that they were counting on to help them get well has been taken away, at least for the moment. And so it's a it's a really real situation they're dealing with, and it's a relentless day-to-day stress.
It absolutely is, and I think the biggest thing is, obviously, nobody told us a pandemic was coming, as in we didn't get a six-month warning, so therefore you couldn't put an action plan in place. So we've all been hit with this situation, and we've had to find our ways to deal with it. And obviously, none of us have lived through a global pandemic before, have we?
Right.
And I think that's what is so challenging is we weren't prepared for it. Therefore, we couldn't have pre-educated ourselves, which has exacerbated the fear factor. And then, like you said, you throw these wild balls at people and go, now I'm going to stop your essential treatment. And for some clients, whether that is ongoing chemotherapy, so obviously I've got clients with ovarian cancer that go through, round after round after round of chemotherapy, or whether that is an essential treatment such as Zoladex to stop the ovaries from producing estrogen, or injections to give more strength to the bones to protect from bone metastases. All of these are on the list of drugs that I have seen stopped for clients. So it's then about going, when a client phones me up distraught, it's about going, okay, so let's together create a different plan of action. And I think that's what I want to come out of today, for people to go, okay, I'm not happy with the situation, I'm fearful, but what can I do? Now, I am going to say this out loud. I did have a client who was hit with this scenario, who did take it to the press and did contact her local MP, and within 4 days, her treatment was restarted.
Wow.
So I think it is important for us to also keep this voice. And this is what I wanted to get out today, was to help people and go, there are things that we can be doing. But B, to give people the confidence that actually we have all got voices, and they should be heard. And this amazing client who took it to the press and took it to her MP, she just did it to raise awareness and didn't necessarily feel it would get her anywhere, but might save somebody else.
Right.
But actually, within a week, her treatment was restarted. So it's amazing how powerful the voice is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, look, it's an interesting scenario. I mean, many of the listeners to this show, of course, already have embraced the concepts you were talking about earlier about looking after the environment of the body in order to make it as hostile as possible towards cancer. Now, that's not really a conventional concept. It's not talked about in hospitals. And for many people who have had their treatment put on hold, this may be the first time they're bumping into this kind of thinking. They're looking outside the box, they're thinking, what on earth can I do? And it is a very different way of looking at chronic disease. And maybe you'd just like to set out the territory a little bit, expand a bit on some of the things you were talking about earlier, about the kind of things you can be addressing in your own body's environment, and how you would go about doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. Somebody gets diagnosed with cancer, and they get told to continue to eat everything that they want to eat. Generally, get told to eat more of the sugary foods because they don't want them losing weight. And would you believe it? I had a client the other day who had a colon cancer, and generally in colon cancer, so newly diagnosed through COVID, generally in colon cancer, they encourage a low fiber diet. So she was told to eat Cocoa Pops and full fat milk.
Right.
Now, it doesn't take anybody to have a nutrition degree to realise that there's no nutritional value in Cocoa Pops. So not only is it full of sugar, it's like, where's the nutritional value in this? So why is it important to understand about the environment? So a cancer cell has between 10 to 20 times the receptors to glucose as a non-cancer cell. Doctors are aware of this because when they do a scan which involves the radioactive isotope, so that might be a CT scan with contrast or a PET scan. When they do one of those scans, they put the radioactive isotope into a pure glucose solution, inject it into the arm. The cancer cell will take up 10 to 20 fold of the glucose and thus the radioactive isotope. And what that will mean when they scan you is that, of course, the cancer cells will light up more than the non-cancer cells. So it goes without saying that doctors are aware of the impact of glucose receptors on a cancer cell, but they never really, absolutely lynch me if your doctor has had this conversation with me, because I look forward to hearing that. But generally, we all know that they don't say anything to you. So one of the things that I always say to a client is we want to get that high glucose out of the diet because we don't want that source of fuel into the cancer cells. Makes sense.
Right.
So Dr. Otto Warburg introduced us to this concept of cancer grows in an oxygen-deprived acidic tissue. Disease cannot live in an alkaline body. And that's a quote direct from him. So if we think about that as, so cancer grows in oxygen deprived. So what do I encourage clients to do? Well, let's focus on oxygenation. What are some practical tips we can do even in lockdown to be able to do this? So we know, and if we go back to our biology days in school, that trees give out O2. So I'm encouraging clients to spend time with nature. And that is, you know, in their garden, if you've got a bit of green space, if you're not feeling well, you can go and sit down outside. If you're feeling well, maybe a bit of barefoot walking on the grass, interaction with the trees, great way to focus on enhancing that oxygen availability. And then we also want to focus on deep breathing exercises. So when we're stressed, we tend to only breathe with about a third of our lungs. And then what we do is we might not be in a full-blown panic attack, but we're not exchanging good oxygen exchange through the body. Whereas deep belly breathing is a great way to consider this. So a very simple strategy that you can take away from is the concept of box breathing. Breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four, hold for four. And that's what we're doing to really try and oxygenate the body. But you must do that more than once in a day. And I encourage clients, whether it's to partner it with turning the kettle on, every time you flip the kettle on, do your box breathing, or set a reminder on your phone. But you want to be doing this sort of 6-8 times a day to get that repetition of deep breathing. And then we said that disease cannot live in an alkaline body. Okay, so what do we need to know about that? So many foods in the Western diet are quite acid form, and things like our processed foods, particularly like processed meat, like I think hams, bacon, sausages, all of those sorts of foods. Flavor enhancers such as monosodium glutamate, which is in Chinese food, takeaway foods, many flavorings in things like crisps, they're all very acid forming. Whereas what's alkalizing is much more towards a plant-based diet, our vegetables, our salads, our herbs. And having these in bigger amounts, such as through juices or smoothies or soups, is a great way to increase that alkalinity. Adding in something like matcha green tea, and you can see a big leap in your pH by having a matcha green tea each day or adding the powder into your smoothie. You can measure this with pH sticks, which you can just buy off the internet. Measure your morning urinary pH and let's play a game of tug of war and try and pull you into alkalinity. And then we're thinking about inflammation. So cancer cells, rather than them using lactate as a nutrient, cancer cells generally export lactate, and this further acidifies the tumor environment. And then lactate, it's called the lactate efflux, provokes a local inflammatory response. And that local inflammatory response then attracts immune cells such as macrophages and cytokines, and those inflammatory cells then are growth factors that drive tumour cell growth and sadly metastases. So what we want to think about is what can we do to dampen inflammation? Now, there's been lots of talks about inflammation relating to COVID and this whole, it's referred to as the cytokine storm. So what we're just trying to think about is what foods have natural anti-inflammatory properties to them. So we know that omega-3s are naturally anti-inflammatory. So you get omega-3s from things like wild fish, salmon, sardines, mackerel, trout, the oily fish. You get omega-3s from flax seeds and chia seeds and walnuts. So think, well, what of those can I add into my diet today? Other foods that have anti-inflammatory properties to it include turmeric, include ginger. So just adding those into your daily diet might be a way to push more towards those anti-inflammatory. Mm. Whereas what's pro-inflammatory is, again, things like your red meats that are reared in more conventional ways, i.e. the animals fed corn, grains in large amounts. However, this doesn't mean all red meats are bad. If you can shop at a farm that has grass-fed red meat, the animals have to work harder for a living and therefore is naturally richer in omega-3. But you do need to look for that grass-fed label. And I tend to find this isn't readily available in conventional supermarkets. This might be where you need to go to like an online distributor from a meat point of view. I use Greg Farm for my meat, and they send to our house on a monthly basis, and their animals are all grass fed. So it's just that sort of looking outside of the conventional supermarkets, and this is nothing to do with food not being available for COVID. It's to do with that meat is generally more expensive because it takes a lot longer to get that animal to a fighting weight, let's say. Mm. So I think that supermarkets might find it more difficult to sell it in comparison to the what looks the same on the shelf. So they're all some very simple but yet effective thought processes of changing that environment. And the more that we can put these things in place, the more that we are back in a position of being in control and feeling as though we're being proactive on a daily basis.
So it's quite interesting to think about the difference between the kind of conventional thinking, if you like, about cancer and this other approach. Conventional thinking tends to think in terms of stopping cancer dead in its tracks, you know, killing it, removing it, whereas this is a case of looking at the process of cancer and applying the brakes.
Absolutely, and do you know what this is? So let's not think so much about COVID and let's just think about it in a general situation. So generally what happens is you get diagnosed with a cancer because you've either found a lump yourself, i.e. breast cancer, or you've had reduced functionality, so i.e. colon cancer, and you suddenly become constipated, get diagnosed with cancer, and you go into this cycle of chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery, maybe immunotherapy, but none of them change the terrain, which means if the terrain remains out of balance, all the things we've just discussed, then actually you remain in an environment where cancer cells are happy to thrive. So however much treatment you have to ideally kill off a primary tumour that's curable, actually, if you leave the terrain, you are very likely to get a regrowth or a new cancer. So COVID or not COVID, this is vital for everybody to be thinking about reducing the risk of a relapse. And you're right, these aren't things that doctors, and you know, my title, Robin, is I have a fellowship in integrative oncology. And if we break that down, what does it mean? I'm not asking clients to go us or them. It's going, no, let's integrate these thought processes. And I've got more than a decade of experience of working in this field and integrating. I'm working slowly but surely surely by the end of my career, my retirement goal is, that when somebody is diagnosed, that the oncologist said, here's my conventional protocol for you, but here, consider this integrative approach as well. And even if it's obviously not funded by the NHS, just for a client to be told that that's an option is mine, and I know it's also lots of other people that you've interviewed. So goal is to raise awareness that there are different thought processes involved in this journey.
Interesting. Just to make clear to any listeners, you brought in the word terrain there, and this is kind of, I think, has come from the sort of seed and soil metaphor about which causes the, you know, to grow a healthy plant. Is it the seed you buy, or is it the soil you put it in? And the body here is being described as the terrain that you're looking after in order not to foster cancer.
Yeah, and absolutely, and you know, I haven't dug deeper into different systems in our body. I've kept it quite generic, but you know, when we're thinking about that terrain, you've also got to go into the individual and go, well, what's going on with your gut microbiome, the seed of your immune system, and what's going on with your detoxification capacity, i.e. are you not detoxifying your used estrogens, for example, and that gives you a opportunity to raise your estrogen levels, driving an estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, just an example. So actually, when we think about that terrain, we need to look at every part of the individual and understand together why this happened. And I guess that they're my favorite words in the world, but why? But why did somebody get cancer? But why did they end up with too much estrogen that dominated their breast cancer? Or why did these cells mutate in their colon? Or why did they get a brain tumor? Why did they get leukemia? Hmm. And I think the deeper you go into that dive of the terrain for the individual, and every individual it will be different, there's some common themes such as altered gut microbiome, which we see more and more in the Western world, part because of diet, part because of pharmaceutical medication use, and stress. Like, I will say that they are very much common themes. Hmm. But then we need to pick it down and go deeper and deeper and deeper and look at, like, your genetic blueprint and the environment you've based that genetic blueprint in for many, many years.
Hmm. It's a sort of Sherlock Holmes job, isn't it? Tracking all this down. That's what you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But just to come back to what you were saying about integration, yeah, and your lifetime aims, fantastic. You're right. So many people want just this information to be out there in a way that every person with cancer has it available to them. It's interesting, of course, you look at functional medicine and everything you do as an adjunct to conventional treatment, strategies that can be used alongside conventional treatment. But actually right now, with this gap in treatment, functional medicine might be, you know, the best thing out there. How much do you think that strategies such as you offer can actually fill the gap, given that this, as you said, might go on for months?
Yeah. Well, like you said, you've absolutely nailed it and said that this might be the only form of medicine available to these people at the moment. So it's really important that everybody sees all options available to them generally. So I would never say to a client, do have the treatment, don't have the treatment. That's not my job, okay? My job is to integrate what I do alongside what they do. But at the moment, that might not be an option for them. So actually, I'm having to work even smarter to make sure that I'm bridging the gap to this hole that suddenly appeared. And I'm bridging the gap on a scientific level, i.e. this terrain concept, but very unique to them. But I'm also bridging the gap on an emotional level, because I am the person that still will pick up the phone to them. I am the person that will give them reassurance and support themselves and their families to know that there are options and that this doesn't have to mean certain death because their treatment has stopped. And you know what? I actually believe that COVID might be a long-term positive to the industry of functional medicine, which is the form of medicine, you're right, that I practice in. And I think it's a very important form of support for a client, not just my cancer clients. I work with other clients as well with my functional medicine approach, which is, in a nutshell, dig down deep and see the whole person and understand why they've gone out of balance. So obviously you can apply that not just to cancer, but to cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative diseases and autoimmunity, and, you know, the list goes on. But I actually think that COVID could be a long-term positive to show that there are different forms of wellness out there, and it isn't just about the purely 100% medical model. It's about going, no, let's look at the individual and let's create a unique plan of action for that individual.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. I wanted to ask you about sort of silver linings, if you like. You know, there are very often unexpected positive consequences from difficult circumstances for individuals, but sometimes for wider groups of people. And you could say, just in the way that an awful lot of people have learned how to do things online they never knew how to do before, they might also learn a lot of things to do with health that they never knew before.
Absolutely. So I'm going to laugh. I've got a smile on my face when you said that, and say, yes, I did a FaceTime consultation with a 75-year-old
right
this week, and he said it was his virgin flight on FaceTime, but he did a great job. So yes, absolutely, we're all learning new skills, aren't we? But I think one of the silver linings that I'm gonna say is, first of all, many people keep their head buried in the sand about their health. So we sort of have this imprint that we're invincible until something happens. And, you know, then it's like, oh my goodness, my so-and-so's been diagnosed with cancer. And I'm a bit like, well, let's look at the statistics of cancer nowadays, about 1 in 2.6 to 2.8. Okay, so why are people shocked when the statistics are so highly in favourable of you or one of your loved ones getting a cancer in their life? Mm. Whereas people play the lottery, where you've got, I don't play the lottery, so I don't know what the statistics are, but say it's a 1 in 8 million chance of being the one. People still spend their £2 to be the one, but yet a 1 in 2.2 chance, and then somebody gets it and you're like, oh my goodness. So I've always sort of had that thought process that maybe if we all got our head out of the sand and was a bit more proactive, we might be able to push back those statistics a little bit, i.e. focus on prevention.
Right.
Now, what COVID has done has proved to the world that we're not invincible, because COVID has affected people from our prime minister to, you know, rich people and famous people. And it isn't, whether it's your worth, your wealth, your race, it's indiscriminative, isn't it? So it's made people aware of, I am not invincible, and maybe there are things that I need to do to protect myself, even against COVID. And the amount of people that were buying things like vitamin C and zinc because it was being talked about that had never used supplements was phenomenal. So I actually think one of the silver linings might be a few people have pulled their head out of the sand and realised that we do need to invest in prevention.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so I wonder, you know, given the circumstances where people can't do everything they want to do at the moment, do you have any other resources outside of your own functional medicine resources that you feel are particularly useful to people with cancer in these circumstances that they can access?
Yeah, so Care Oncology in London have converted all of their consultations to online. Care Oncology use off-licence drugs. It's a group of doctors, if people aren't familiar with them, that are using off-licence drugs. So drugs like metformin, which blocks the blood glucose receptors. And they are, again, working tirelessly to increase the number of consultations. And instead of having to go to London for the initial consultation, they've transferred it all to remote consultation like myself. So So that is another resource, and I know that clients who have contacted me have also said, and I've been in contact with Care Oncology, and I share many clients with Care Oncology and send many clients to them, and vice versa. So that's definitely another consideration for people to go down that line and to talk to them about the potential for off-licence drugs.
Maybe for listeners who have not heard of this approach before, I might just say that interestingly enough, we've been talking about altering processes in the body in order to slow down the progress of cancer by changing the environment. Well, these are conventional drugs that are being used to achieve the same ends, interestingly, but very often they're drugs which were actually developed for a completely different condition, but just happened to have this kind of effect, as you said, like metformin, for example, which is quite good for controlling blood sugar. That's what diabetics need it for.
And the research that's coming out of those drugs is phenomenal. So it's definitely a space to keep looking at, keep watching the wider drugs that have been considered. And actually, that's just like COVID. Look at what's been talked about in COVID.
Yes.
So they're not looking, I mean, I'm sure that they are working in laboratories to go, can we make a new drug? But what they're doing is they're using repurposed drugs.
Mm.
So they're looking at chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for COVID. But you know, hydroxychloroquine is a rheumatoid arthritis drug. So it's just sort of going, actually, there are multi-benefits of using these. And the difference is that some of those drugs that they're using at Care Oncology cost pennies. Mm. Like, they're really cheap for the NHS. But because repurposed drugs is not something that they are prepared to engage in at the moment, people do need to go down the private sector to do this. Mm. But it's a really interesting unfolding that's been happening over the last probably 5 odd years, and will continue to increase that unfolding as we learn more and more, and they're doing more and more research trials on people. And I always say, think of cancer a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. So improve the diet, that might give you 20 pieces to the puzzle. Utilize supplementation very targeted, that might give you 10 pieces to the puzzle. Care Oncology, that might give you 30 pieces to the puzzle. Lifestyle medicine, that might give you another 15 pieces to the puzzle, and that includes your sleep, your relaxation, your meditation, your all of those sorts of things. And actually, if we keep adding these in, then we start to be able to see a picture. So no, there isn't one thing that if you've got a really serious disease that is going to be the one thing. I'm sorry to admit that one thing doesn't really exist.
Right.
But the multiple things do. And again, that's what I say to my clients. I work like pure project manager to go, right, okay, so we need to look at this, and create like an action plan of going, how can we add in these adjunct interventions to see a picture? And that's what, you know, that's the analogy I give to my clients.
Right. So, yeah, building it up through a wide range of strategies. Yeah, that seems to be the way to go. Anyway, I agree with you that the whole repurposing of drugs is a fascinating new area, and I think a lot is going to come out of that. I just thinking to myself, well, we talked a lot about functional medicine during the program, but actually a lot of the listeners might not have any idea really what functional medicine is all about. Do you want to just give us a sort of a succinct definition?
Absolutely. So it's a systems-based approach to medicine which looks at every part of the human being. So, for example, you've got gut problems, you go see a gastroenterologist, and you've got skin problems, you go see a dermatologist, and you've got brain problems and you go see a neurologist, but never do all of those doctors sit down and consider that your gut and your skin and your brain might be linked to each other. Mm-hmm. Whereas functional medicine, I look at every system within the body and look at how those systems are out of balance. So it's very much about the but why. And like I said, it is science-based, so everything I do is backed up with science, backed up with research, backed up with evidence. But it's individualized. So again, we go to see a doctor and we have to fit the NICE guidelines. The NICE guidelines don't fit us. and that, you know, the concept of square pegs and round holes, they don't sit in each other equally.
Right.
Whereas what I do is every one of my clients has an individualized approach depending on what they're diagnosed with or what their symptoms are, what they can manage, what their support network is, what their finances are. Everything is about them, and everything is negotiated and agreed with them as an individual. So it very much is putting them at the centre of my piece of paper and me working around them rather than, like I said, them hitting a protocol that was already pre-written.
Interesting. Okay, that's great. Thanks for that. So... we're about out of time, so I just wondered if you want to throw in any last tips on day-to-day actions, choices, etc., that could be helpful to listeners who are holed up in a flat somewhere in Nottingham, can't go out anywhere, and they're not getting their cancer treatment.
Okay, so the first thing is, I would say, try not to panic, because we all know that stress is negative on the body and actually makes the body more acidic. Think about what you can be in control of. So reach out to people like myself, reach out to Care Oncology, reach out to anybody that, you know, Robin's interviewed many amazing practitioners before, because actually we're all here to support you through this. Focus on what you can change. You even take away some from today. Okay, so I'm going to reduce the sugar. I'm going to eat more portions of vegetables to try to alkalize my body. And remember, you still have a voice. So it is okay to positively raise awareness. And this is what I'm trying to do. This is the goal of today is we have got a voice and we can raise awareness. So whether that is through social media or the media or MPs, because sadly, every day when we listen to that press release, well, I don't actually listen to it, but when people listen to that press release at 4 p.m. or whatever time it is, and those numbers are at the bottom of the screen, when have you heard them talk about and the numbers of people that might die as a result of this? And there has been a little bit of awareness in the last couple of weeks, but honestly, not in comparison to what is deserved. And your listeners or your listeners' family or friends or whoever it is deserve the best possible care. And, you know, we've all got to work together as a collaborative team to try and make that possible.
Right. Okay, thank you. You're very passionate about this stuff, and thank you very much for coming forward and suggesting we talk about it today. It's been really great. Hope some of that information people find really useful. I think they will. Thanks a lot, Jo.
Thanks, Robin.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
If you're one of the people that Jo has been addressing, someone whose cancer treatment has been indefinitely suspended, I send you my very best wishes and the hope that you've heard something helpful in this show. Last week saw the launch of Yes to Life's Wigwam online forums, and our first event featuring Jessica Richards talking and answering questions on fear, the deadliest virus of all, was a success despite a few technical challenges, and the recording of the event will be available shortly as a resource to members on the new Wigwam website, which is wigwam.org.uk. I do urge you to take a look at the website, and while you're there you'll find full details of and booking for the second online forum featuring exercise specialist Lizzie Davis. Thanks for listening today. Please make a point of joining me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.